Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Internet. It's a nice day. A good day.
Hey, we have a special guest.
Yeah, wait, am I supposed to say something right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, say hello. It's Megan Rose Dickey.
Hey, everyone. I'm Megan Rose Dickey.
First time on the show on Good Day Internet and DTNS. Mm. Hopefully not the last.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, I mean, we'll see how this goes.
We hope it's not the last. You can tell us after the show.
Before the show, Megan was like, this is like casual and chill, right? I'm like, yeah.
You're like, you
then
don't
I connect.
Know.
She's like, why are you wearing a hat?
Wait.
Yeah, everyone has a hat.
It's Hat Friday. Basically, Megan, this is our excuse not to have to mess with our hair on one day a week for this video.
I see.
So,
got it.
At least that's why I do it. I was like, hey, guys, why don't we do Hat Fridays?
I just have a lot of hats, so.
Yeah. I also have a lot of hats, too.
Mm-hmm. I have hats that no longer fit me, so I don't care as much for Hat Friday.
They no longer fit you?
Did the hat shrink? Your head in the machine.
Head is expanding.
It is.
Shrinking.
They're shrinking. It's because I washed them in the washing machine.
Ah, gotcha.
Like, silly me, I thought you could wash them.
I just thought you were getting smarter. Your brain's just getting...
But that's medically impossible.
That's why it's so amazing.
It's amazing.
So Megan, everyone, works at TechCrunch.
Oh yeah, that's true. I didn't say that.
Senior writer and, you know, all around wonderful.
Yeah,
person.
I got. Yeah. After you left, Sarah, I got promoted. Not like right after. Like 17 years.
You made it sound like Sarah was holding you back. Finally.
Thanks, Sarah, for opening a spot.
When's your next traveler or disrupt or whatever? I know you guys are doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to a blockchain event in Zug, Switzerland. That's early July. I'm a huge blockchain expert, so it's going to be great. I'm not at all. I barely know anything about it. But
so tell me, when the public ledger dropped... Yeah, no, I got you.
What's the significance of Zug?
So apparently it's called Crypto Valley. Like there's just... Yeah, I don't... Yeah, it was news to me.
The city
but...
was founded by Satoshi Nakamoto.
Right.
Which is weird because the city itself is on the top of a mountain and there really is no valley.
Yeah.
Is it a valley? I'm just curious. Now I got to look at it.
I don't know.
It's usually when you have a mountain, you have a valley.
Municipality.
Yeah, but if you're... Hold on. Continue conversing.
That's cool. That's fun. When is that?
Yeah, so that's... I think the event's July 7th.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, it'll be my first time in Switzerland, so it should be pretty chill. Yeah. Yeah, then I'm going to stick around a couple extra days. Kind of bop around.
The name refers to the right to pull up fishing nets, so you should do some fishing.
Cool, good to know. Yeah. Okay. I've never fished before. So first time for everything.
The word Zug does?
Yeah.
I actually, some of my family lives in Switzerland, but I've never been to Zug.
Really? I didn't know that.
We're in Switzerland?
In Zurich.
Okay, cool. Nice. I mean, that's close. I think it's like an hour drive.
Yeah, I mean, the country is, you know, it's not huge. It's very vertical, but, you know, it's nothing's too far away from anything else.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
We're keeping you up, TJF, everybody.
Yeah, seriously.
Sorry about that. For the past couple days, I've been getting up at like 5 in the morning. Jeez. And then I just can't get back to sleep.
Like, I'm with you. If I'm within like 2 hours of when I want to get up, then I'm just like, my body is just like, get up.
Like, why even bother?
As soon as my clock hits 7, I'm up. 7:30, I'm up.
I mean, 7 would be like somebody gave me free money.
Sleeping in, right.
Oh, yeah. But it just doesn't happen. But I also have cats, and they're like, they're annoying, and, you know.
Oh, gosh.
I just wait at my clock just goes off, my internal clock. And it's like, oh, it's probably around 5:30 in the morning right now. Yep. Okay. Here it is.
Well, I like to leave my shades open because, well, I don't know. I mean... I like to leave my window open because I can hear the ocean where I live. Mm-hmm. And then I just often just don't close my shades. But like as soon as that little piece of sun, not like sun in my face, but just light, mm-hmm. I can't sleep anymore. People are like, why don't you wear like an eye thing? And I'm like, I don't know.
Why don't you sleep in a sensory deprivation chamber?
Because I just want to torture myself and then tell you guys about how.
Because that doesn't make a good podcast story. That's why.
My sensory deprivation tank is just a t-shirt. Like I'll put a t-shirt over my head.
Really? And that doesn't fall off or anything?
No, you just wrap it around your head just like a blindfold.
Seems like something smaller would do the trick, but maybe
it just happens to be on the floor. I'm like, I'm just going to wrap this t-shirt around my head.
Blindfold of convenience.
Right.
And Nora was like, why do you do that? You've been doing that since you were in college. Why do you wrap a t-shirt around your head? I don't know. It's comfortable. Yeah. I don't know.
I just sleep. I fall asleep easy, and I wake up when I wake up. So it's pretty consistent, but I don't need to.
Now, let me ask you something. Do you have, like, in your home, do you have, like, an easy chair or, like, a recliner or anything like that that you end up falling asleep in?
I mean, I wouldn't like to call it an easy chair. It's just seems rude, but we have a
wise complex chair.
Yes.
Yeah. We have some we have some comfy chairs.
Yeah. What I found is that I will fall asleep in that chair and it'll be comfortable, but nothing matches just lying in your own bed. Suddenly it's like, oh, I really enjoy this position. It's nice and I'm ready to go off to slumberland.
Well, the blessing and curse I have is I have a great couch. It's deep. It's soft. It's basically a bed. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Yeah.
But if I fall asleep on the couch, then it's like at 2 a.m, then I got to get up and then fall asleep again in the bed.
That's no good.
It's problematic.
Well, you know, I'd say that you're both lucky to have space in your apartment for a couch. I don't even... My San Francisco apartment is so small. It's just like bed in my room, bed in my roommate's room, kitchen. So like it's just always straight bed for me.
But there's a new service to share couches. So.
Wait, is there?
No, I just made that up.
I mean, it sounds like something that would be invented, though.
That's like, true.
Wait, is your apartment actually that small, or is it one of those ones where they divided what used to be a much larger like room into like multiple small rooms?
So one of the rooms was the living room. So it's technically a one-bedroom apartment, but we made it into two.
I see. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Very San Francisco.
Indeed.
And when I left, I was in a 800 square foot apartment with two bedrooms, washer, dryer. It was great. I was paying...
Yeah, you had a washer dryer in your unit. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's the reason why I never left for 14 years. but I was paying $1,500 a month up until the last year when it went up to $1,850. But that was like, rent control. Crazy. It was great.
That's an apartment?
Yeah.
Dude.
Now it was probably like...
The chair recognizes the outraged renter from Cleveland.
No, I'm not a renter. No, I own a house, and that's like...
Good for you.
Way less than my mortgage. God.
Well, that's super unusual for San Francisco. Yeah. Like, nobody's...
Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah.
I got there in the beginning of 2001.
So. That's... Oh, my God. So, when did you leave? So
I left at the December of 2016.
Oh, okay. And that was your rent in 2016?
Yeah, my rent went up to $1,850 the last year, so 2016 was $1,850. But for the previous 13 years, it was $1,500 a month. I just had to pay electricity and gas.
Wow.
And water, garbage taken care of.
I think I was paying $1,800 in 2000 for a studio. So that was a deal that you got.
Chinese Connection.
Wow.
I look trustworthy, I guess. I don't know. And my landlord would always ask me to help him with stuff.
Because
he had a lower unit. He's like, hey, Roger, can you help me carry this water heater through your house or place and downstairs?
Okay. And you with super strength are like, yeah, sure.
Sure. No. Why not? Hmm. Like family, because we're both Chinese. Right?
I'm sorry. That's so shocking to me. I guess I never really thought Wow. That's very shocking.
Nah, my landlord was pretty cool. Like, he didn't do much in the way of, like, fixing a lot of things, but I didn't care because I fixed it. Like, I can do, like, 90% of the stuff. Pipes, plumbing, toilet, everything.
Yeah, I mean, not raising your rent for that long.
That's crazy.
Like, you know what? I will go out and buy a $10 float bowl and install it in my toilet because the other one's leaking. And you not bother you. Just leave my rent alone. I'll be happy. Mm.
See, I would also not bother my landlord, but I would just be like, yeah, the toilet doesn't work. I don't know.
My landlord makes me fix that stuff myself. He's like, oh, yeah, if the toilet breaks, that's on you. That's part
of
it.
Oh, it is?
Really?
Yeah. Wow. That's a weird one.
That doesn't seem right. That doesn't seem right.
Yeah. Like,
you can call a plumber, but
what does the landlord do
from your rent?
He's not going to pay for it.
Does he do anything for you, like maintenance-wise?
Oh, yeah. No, when the basement flooded, he paid for all that. He fixed all of that stuff. Okay. And he pays for the gardener to come and, you know, clean out the gutters and blow leaves and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, he's a good landlord, but...
Except for that one bit.
The washer, the dryer, the internal toilet parts, all of that, that's all on me.
Ooh.
That's
the worst part too,
dude. Actually. I mean, if somebody, you know, like light bulbs, of course I have to buy those.
Oh,
but,
yeah, of
you
course.
Know, if an outlet dies, like, I, you know.
We had an outlet die, he paid for that. Yeah. So electricity, he took care of that.
But my landlord in San Francisco, he would even give me batteries for the fire alarms. Like, oh, it's the new year. Here's a bunch of 9 volts you're going to have to replace.
Wow. Why'd you ever
Sounds
leave?
Like a great landlord. Yeah.
You should have asked him to move in with you down here.
I think it's because I'm super low maintenance and I don't break stuff. Like,
well,
I
also, that would, you know, if the place, he doesn't want the place to burn down. So,
yeah.
Yeah. You know. I mean, the decor is from late 1970, but whatever, you know. Back then, everything was... All the countertops.
Well, now it's retro, so it's back in style.
Like it missed the avocado. Actually, he even paid for a new fridge. Like I said, I think a mouse died in this one, and it was really just like,
whoa.
And he gave me, and his wife gave me $20 to tip the movers. My landlord was awesome.
You
was
never great. Talked this nicely about him when you lived there. That's so funny.
I never talked about him.
No, I know.
Like, well, now he's like, oh, good rent.
Don't know what you got until it's gone.
Good landlord. Man.
I mean, like, that place is probably high 2,000s, low 3,000s a month.
I'm sure.
Megan, do you still live in Noe? Did I get that right?
So I used to live in Noe. Now I'm in Coal Valley, though. So one of the other valleys.
Oh, I like that.
Nice. I do, too.
And I mean, my rent's so cheap, though, like, considering for San Francisco, like, I pay... under $1,000 a month. So, I mean, nice. Yeah, I don't have a couch or a living room, but, you know.
Well, you know, if you like the roommate, it's a great situation.
Exactly. We've known each other since we were 14. She was my first girlfriend. Like, we're like, best friends again. Yeah, we're super close.
And Coal Valley has some stuff you can go out and hang out.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Apparently, someone told me the other day that it has a 100 walking score.
Wow, really?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, because like everything is essentially within walking distance, like grocery store, pharmacy, urgent care.
Are you on top or the bottom of the valley? So like, do you have to go down to those stores?
Yeah, I go down. Well, no. So I'm like right in the valley.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's all just right there.
Because I was the one that had to trudge up the hill to get home from the BART station.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But that helps the old ticker. You know, it's all
about
it. It does.
No, I agree.
Physical locomotion.
All right. So we're about ready to do the show. Sarah, can you read the opening?
I can and I will.
Excellent. That was going to be my next question.
I'm physically able to, Tom. Yes.
I was just checking. I didn't want to assume. All right.
Of course.
Everybody ready?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Here we go. 3, 2.
Daily Tech News Show is powered by you. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, June 22nd, 2018 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
It's the second day of summer in Cleveland. I'm Len Peralta.
And very excited to have Megan Rose Dickey, senior reporter at TechCrunch, on the show. Hi, Megan.
Hey, everyone. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. We're going to
former coworker of mine.
Indeed.
Indeed, indeed. Well, it's good to see you. It's
you too,
you
yeah.
Our, you know, in a totally different situation.
We're going to talk with Megan a little bit about startups and diversity and probably solve all the internet's problems in a little bit. Our producer, Roger Chang, is here putting this whole show together. Roger?
Hello.
Thank you. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Movie ticket subscription service Cinemia announced new family plans, which now include up to 6 people and up to 3 movies per month per person. A premium option can add IMAX and 3D movies as well. Cinemia works with Fandango, Movie Tickets, and Atom Tickets, and is available in Australia, the UK, Turkey, Canada, and the US.
Twitter announced it was acquiring the trust and safety as a service startup Smite to help it better address issues related to online abuse, harassment, spam, and security on its platform. But it's also decided to immediately shut down access to Smite's API, and it didn't really warn people, leaving some of Smite's existing customers no time to transition to a new service provider. So they're not happy.
Podcast app Pocket Cast is now out of private beta for Android and open to all Android users. Still in beta, just open. The company tweeted that the open beta might have some broken builds, but welcomes the public to test new features by grabbing the app from the Google Play Store. Pocket Cast was acquired in May by a collective group including NPR, WNYC, WBEZ in Chicago, and This American Life.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about some details coming out of the police investigation of the Uber crash in Arizona. A Tempe, Arizona police report says evidence showed that the safety driver in the Uber vehicle that struck and killed a pedestrian was streaming a television show on her phone at the time of the accident. Records from Hulu showed the driver streaming The Voice until approximately the time of the crash, then it stopped. The report calls the accident entirely avoidable because of this. The video shows her looking down for 5-plus seconds at a time. The driver, Rafaela Vasquez, could face manslaughter charges. That has not been determined yet.
Well, my first question is always, how does Hulu know for sure that she hadn't given her account to somebody else and this was actually what she was doing?
Fair enough. They don't. They only know that her account was streaming that at the time, right?
Yeah, and granted, I mean, the video showed that she was distracted. Mm-hmm. Granted that just because she was distracted and clearly looking at her phone, it doesn't mean that it was Hulu, but if it was her account, then it seems.
Yeah, it all kind of
like she probably was.
Yeah, it all kind of fits. And that may be the difference between saying we deem this an avoidable wreck, but we're not sure if we're bringing charges, is those kind of areas of doubt there.
But well, go ahead,
Megan.
Oh, no, I was also just going to say, okay, no, you go. No, I got it. Okay. So
go ahead.
All right, let me go then. Okay. So I was just going to say that, I mean, yes, the safety driver needs to be paying attention in these autonomous vehicles, but I still think the real problem was the fact that Uber's software didn't act on its own, because that's like the whole promise of these autonomous vehicles, that these cars will be able to make good, sound, safe decisions and theoretically shouldn't need that safety driver. Granted, it didn't help that the software failed, and then on top of that, the safety driver wasn't paying attention. So it was just two things that went wrong. And I don't know, I just want to make sure that we're not totally putting the blame on the driver, although yes, she should have been paying attention.
Yeah, there's more than one and probably more than two reasons that this happened. And you know, I was talking in our Slack earlier. Look, it's easy to vilify her, but remember, you're in a car that you've been in for a long time and it hasn't messed up, and you get reliant on that, oh, well, it'll stop itself if there's a problem. You're on an empty road where you don't expect there to be any obstacles. You are not at a crosswalk, so you wouldn't expect someone to walk in front of you. Those aren't excuses, but all of us would be tempted to not pay as much of attention. I would hope that all of us would, you know, if we were in this position, double down and make sure that we didn't give into that temptation. But it's, you know, there are conditions here that would lead you to want to not pay attention. And if you're in this position, you should pay attention. that safety net that she got lulled into experiencing just didn't work this time.
Yeah, I mean, I think a big part of this is, you know, these are safety tests. In a perfect mm-hmm. world, these cars are going to work so well that people could be able to stream video. You know, it sounds crazy to us, but that's the whole idea, is that the car does the job itself. This is jumping the gun a little bit. So, yeah, it's... Yeah, I don't know. Down the road, maybe she would have been, you know, watching a movie and it wouldn't have been such a big deal. But it's kind of hard to side with somebody who's seeming lax during something that's yeah. supposed to be proving what autonomous vehicles are.
Yeah. And I mean, and as it stands today, I mean, well, granted, I'm actually not sure of the law in Arizona, but like at least in California, it is illegal to like have your phone in your hand when you're behind the wheel. Mm. So, yeah, again, I'm not sure exactly what the legislation is in Arizona.
Well, but and how is that a legislation applied in this kind of case where you're doing right. a test vehicle is another interesting question. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's still a lot of like things to be worked out around, you know, liability and yeah.
Let's talk about VidCon, specifically YouTube announcing new revenue options for creators. All creators with 100,000 or more subscribers who are also older than 18 can now offer memberships for $4.99 a month, $5 a month, which includes custom badges, an exclusive emoji, as well as members-only posts and other perks. Creators with more than 10,000 subscribers can offer up to 20 merchandise options from their channel page in partnership with Teespring. Creators who use brand sponsor company FameBit can offer their own merchandise from the same area. YouTube is also adding premieres for scheduling the first stream of pre-recorded video with chat.
So, I mean, one of the complaints about YouTube has been a lack of monetization options, even from some of their biggest stars. And this certainly is an effort to try to allay those fears and say, hey, that thing we were using with YouTube gaming, now available for everybody. Granted, you have to have 100,000 subscribers, so this isn't going to help you till you get popular. But I don't know. What do you guys think? How far does this go in calming down the sort of pitchfork crowd?
Well, I don't know. I mean, this definitely seems like YouTube is taking, you know, a page from Patreon and Twitch and some other social networks that are also video based and offering merchandise options. As we all know, merchandise options can be really lucrative. Doesn't mean that if you have 10,000 subscribers, you're going to make a lot of money selling t-shirts. But if you want to put more effort into that, to have YouTube help you build it into the community you've already started to build, I mean, I think some people are probably going to be happy about this. It's also more work.
Yeah, it's absolutely more work. And I mean, I think it's just, I mean, I think it's good that YouTube is doing this because, of course, they don't want to lose their creators to other platforms. And I mean, even Instagram just this week announced a longer form like video feature. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of growing competition in this space.
Yeah, and I think they're taking on Patreon a little bit here too, because having a regular subscription is sort of competing with Patreon. Patreon just announced that they are also going to add the ability to auto-deliver merch with a partnership with a merchandise provider. So that YouTube kind of scooped them on that. And the brand sponsor thing is very endemic to YouTube. If I'm I'm Brownie Cameras is my brand. I can now just sell Brownie Cameras in my YouTube merchandise section, and that's gonna work really good for branded content.
Megan, do you follow anyone on YouTube that you are not just anybody, but anybody okay. that you are, you know, you're enough of a fan and, you know, audience member loyal that you would pay $5 a month?
No, but I also don't, I watch very little on YouTube. Like, this is really not for me. I think, remember Francesca Ramsey? She did those videos. This was like years ago. So like, this was the last time I was on YouTube, was maybe 4 years ago when she did this video, like shit white girls say to black people or something like that. And I'd buy her merchandise, but now she has her own website and I don't need to do it through YouTube.
Gotcha. So, yeah. Daily Tech News Show. Not sponsored by Brownie Cameras. In the case of Carpenter versus the United States, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled 5-4 that police must generally show probable cause and therefore obtain a warrant to obtain cell phone tower records to determine a phone's location. This is just about determining location in the past. It's a very narrow ruling. It doesn't even apply to live tracking. It doesn't apply to data or anything else. But to go to a cell phone company and say, we want you to show us where this phone was in the past by your tower records, you have to get a warrant. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote that the fact that the information is held by a third party does not by itself overcome the user's claim to Fourth Amendment protection. And that had been the case up until now, is courts had ruled, well, if a third party holds information, you don't have an expectation of privacy because the third party knows it. And so therefore, you don't need a warrant for this stuff. And the Supreme Court is saying, well, in this case, this is such valuable information just because it's stored with a third party doesn't get rid of your rights. This is a big deal. You know, like a lot of people are worried about this sort of thing as far as, you know, protecting your privacy. So I think it's maybe unusual that I don't think people would have expected the Supreme Court to rule this way, maybe.
Well, I mean, it seems to me that this is very logical because cell phone data might be held by a third party. If police have a warrant, the fact that they're not maintaining the data from that cell tower, that wouldn't excuse them going after somebody if, again, there's probable cause, and that's all very relative.
Yeah, I think that's the surprising part, is this seems logical, and yet it's also how they ruled.
You just said yesterday you love the Supreme Court justices.
I do. I'm a fan of the Supreme Court. That doesn't mean I agree with them every time.
Exactly. Moving on to Facebook. Facebook expanded its Messenger Kids app outside the U.S. to Canada and Peru and added Spanish and French support in all of these markets. The app also requires parents and children to agree to be kind, be respectful, be safe, and have fun before using the app. Okay. Facebook also added kindness stickers and will also add an appreciation mission to encourage appreciation of friends and family. This app has been criticized by some child psychologists, so clearly Facebook is going real in on how much fun and safe and kind it all is, which is not a bad thing.
You will have fun. You have agreed to have fun.
You will have fun in the Facebook way.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly wanting to, you know, get those people over from Snapchat. And because, I mean, I feel like there's an article every day about how the youths are abandoning Facebook, and Facebook is really needing to try to figure out a way to, you know, like maintain that audience. But then on the flip side, like my colleague Sarah Perez, like she's thought deeply about, you know, like how she wants her kid to use social media and Facebook. And so, I mean, it's definitely a concern that parents have around around privacy. So in this case, like, yes, you know, the app requires the parents to agree to certain things. But yeah, I don't know. Facebook is a tricky place. I've been off of it for a while.
As a parent, I will just make this one observation. This kind of reminds me of what they used to do with breakfast cereals when they wanted to get kids. They would make all these child-friendly things, even though what they were serving it was a bowl full of sugar. And, you know, I think, you know, especially with so much of the concern being online, whether it's cyberbullying or getting into places you don't think your kid belongs, you know, this just seems like a lot of paint on like a very thin veneer of nice and child friendly without necessarily kind of addressing the innate issues that are within Facebook.
Well, when we announced the launch of Messenger for Kids, there are a lot of things they do in this app to address those issues. I think we need to be fair on that. But your point remains, getting kids used to using Messenger does open them up to, you know, other kids, even if they're approved by parents, to do what kids do. And I think your breakfast cereal analogy is perfect, because what Facebook wants is these 6 to 12-year-olds to grow up to use regular Facebook instead of Snapchat, like Megan was saying. So this is sort of the entryway into getting them in the door. UK solar energy company Beebox is partnering with DCGo to provide off-grid electricity in Lesotho, South Africa, and Swaziland. The product will offer pay-as-you-go use of the solar equipment, and they plan to target people who either don't have access to reliable electricity, including those who use unauthorized grid connections, which a lot of times can be dangerous because they're not properly shielded or monitored. Beebox signed a contract with the Democratic Republic of Congo earlier this month to provide off-grid solar energy to 2.5 million citizens by 2020. I think this is important to note because a lot of times we think, oh, solar energy, that's what Elon Musk provides to people in suburban areas in Europe and the United States. And this is a great example of how it can be used to provide energy to people who really need it.
Yeah, no, I mean, go on, Sarah. No, you go. I went last time. You go.
No, you're my guest. I insist.
I mean, I was just going to say that, I mean, there was that time when after like the crisis in Puerto Rico, like Elon Musk like provided solar energy. So I mean, of course, it's not just yet in suburban areas, but there are really like potential like massive like benefits of really ensuring that this solar energy and this technology is, you know, international.
Yeah, and affordable too.
Right, and affordable, of course. Yeah.
Hey, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to Daily Tech Headlines at dailytechheadlines.com. So, Megan, two stories that you covered recently on TechCrunch caught my eye. One was VC firm Kane & Partners setting aside $20 million of its fund to be allocated for investment by its two youngest employees, Houtan Rashidafard, who's 28, and Adina Teklu, who's 27. The other was the story that the number of black women receiving more than $1 million in investment has risen from 12 in 2015 to 34 in 2017. Now, the number of startups led by black women has risen from 84 to 227, so it's still a small percentage. Mm-hmm. But I think the obvious take on these stories is diversity in tech is improving, but still has a long way to go. I think another thing to think about is that if you want to solve a lot of these problems in tech, like we're talking about the abuse of data and privacy, mm-hmm. you need different perspectives from right. founders on the ground floor. It seems like, I'm not saying that these are the panacea, obviously, but these are good programs to help encourage that, right?
Yeah, I mean, with the one with Kane & Partners is super cool. Like, I'm really into it. Because the idea is that, you know, oftentimes, I mean, the VC industry is predominantly older white men. So that's a very limited.
It's like 72%, right? I think according to
you. Yeah. So it's there are very few like young people of color who actually have a decision in saying like this should get money, this shouldn't get money, et cetera. So the idea, like what Kanan is kind of betting on is that by having these two younger people who also just happen to be people of color, that they'll be able to see things that other investors might miss out on, and in doing that, be able to better serve the actual population of the world and not just like one select group of people. And yeah, I mean, as you said earlier, the obvious take is yes, diversity is slowly improving, like at a snail's pace, and there's still work to be done. And I think that'll unfortunately continue to be the story for years to come, that will just be these like minor increments in progress, but no really like massive overarching changes.
I think that one of the reasons that happens is you have people in charge of the companies who, despite their best efforts, have a certain perspective, and they're naturally inclined to say, oh, but this person's really good at this job because they're like me, right? That's true mm-hmm. of all of us. And so to combat that, you need different founders who have different perspectives and say, oh, but this person is like me, so I'm gonna bring them along. And then you start to balance out and you start to look at people based on what kind of ideas they bring in and how good it is, rather than, oh, I just want to have more of the same. So that's why I think these two programs in particular caught my eye as being important, because this is planting the seed. Like you say, it takes a long time for that tree to grow.
Yeah, and some of this came up even just in the Facebook Cambridge Analytica scandal. Like, I saw a lot of people on Twitter saying, you know, like, this is kind of what happens when you have when you don't have a diverse set of people working on problems, like even like beyond, you know, like race, gender, sexual orientation, but just if you don't have a diverse group of people, then you're going to miss out on certain things. Like you need optimist and you need pessimist, like the ones thinking like, okay, what is the worst case scenario? How can this technology be abused? Like, what effect could this have? As opposed to all people just kind of all thinking the same way about things and not really thinking about the broader implications.
Going back to Kanan Partners, Megan, I don't know if you know Hutan and Adina or either of them. 28 and 27, you know, as a person in tech and VC, it's like they're not that young. You know?
I know, yeah, they're pretty old.
But as a, you know, as a firm usually is structured, that would be on the younger side to
right.
allocated quite a bit of money. But at the same time, you know, you read a headline like this and you say, oh wow, that's, you know, that's great. You know, they're listening to the youth. They have to, because these two, as well as, you know, many other peers in that age group, you see things that as an older person, not that, you know, once you get to a certain age, you don't know what the tech trends are anymore, but you know different trends because you live differently.
Yeah. Yeah. These, I mean, they're like, well, Hutan, he goes by Hootie, just, you know, but Hootie and Adina, I mean, they started as analysts at the firm. And of course they had been kind of helping with investment decisions, but they'd never actually been given the opportunity to, you know, find companies on their own. And Adina was telling me just that, you know, she graduated from Stanford and like still kind of has that network of like just out of college aged friends and acquaintances. And also like something that the people often reference is just, you know, Jeremy Liu, one of the first investors in Snapchat, like it was one of his partners at the firm, like his teenage daughter who like told him about Snapchat. And like, so you kind of need people like on the ground with the youth to really, you know, figure
Absolutely.
Out what
this
thing is.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to admit this, but more and more I'm like, what is that? You know, like,
oh yeah.
Who's the young person who can explain the context of this to me?
No, for the longest time, my wife was the one who kept me up to date on the cool stuff. And then we both got too old and it was her younger sister. Now her younger sister's getting older. And we're like, where are the young, cool people to make sure we know what's going on? Like it just, if you're in a circle that is homogenous, just think of age. And that will give you an example of like, oh, there are perspectives that you need if you want to stay mm-hmm. conversant with what's happening out there.
Well, and the whole idea of diversity being an issue, and yes, going in the right direction, but as you mentioned, Megan, it's a trickle. The more that this gets shaken up, the more that things change, because it's been the same way for a long time, even in Silicon Valley.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think we're definitely moving in the right direction, but then unfortunately, like, then you see, you know, the infamous Google manifesto, that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was at a dinner last night with Salesforce's chief equality officer, Tony Proffitt. And, you know, we were just kind of talking about the memo and he was just saying that, you know, there's a James Damore at every single tech company. Like that could happen anywhere. And really it's about meeting people where they are and not necessarily trying to change their minds, but at least help them to become allies. And he had a lot of great examples that I'm totally blanking on now. but yeah, or something that he said was, yeah, like you, like an employee might support Black Lives Matter or something and generally support Black people. But that, you know, in this one particular police shooting, like maybe that person thought it was the kid's fault. Maybe they didn't think the police officer was at fault, but it doesn't mean that they're necessarily like anti-Black and don't want you to do well. Yeah, so I mean, I think the ways that the diversity and inclusion conversation has evolved over the years has begun to include talk around allyship and people being accomplices and actually, you know, trying to understand where people are coming from and then to support them in the workplace.
Yeah, it's about dialogue, right? It's about talking, yeah.
Absolutely. Speaking of dialogue, thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You can submit stories and also vote on stories at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow. All right, Chris Christensen has some details on using the Amazon Echo in hotels.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech in Travel Minute. It was mentioned on the show this week that Amazon is rolling out into hotels a special version of their voice assistant, She Who Must Not Be Named for Hospitality. And while I felt a little left out that you announced it without me, I thought I'd add my two cents on this. One of the things that's interesting about this is that they are adding additional commands that are appropriate for the hotel, including controlling the drapes and ordering room service and finding out what time the spa is open or whether the pool is open. But the thing that wasn't mentioned is that one of the problems with these devices is knowing what commands are available. So some of the success of this program, and it's only rolling out to 10 Marriotts this summer, but some of the success is going to be dependent on, is the signage or the information they give the guests enough information to know all of these special commands, not to mention the fact that this is also just a regular Amazon Echo or something in that family, and do enough people want to use them like they use them at home or not? That's the bet. We'll see. Hotels have certainly been known to invest in things like Android tablets that people don't end up using, or that really fancy clock radio that you just end up unplugging because the light is keeping you awake. So we'll see how successful this project is. If anybody has stayed in one of the hotels that has this, I'd be really interested to hear about your experience. I'm Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
Oh, man. I'm glad to know it's not just me that unplugs that light.
It's like, depending on the hotel, you know how some hotels have sort of paper-thin walls and you can hear the person's TV on the other side? Now you're going to hear the person being like, Alexa, it's not working.
No, close the drapes. Close the drapes.
Close. Room service.
I mean, it's a great point. You can ask an Echo to tell you commands to use, but people aren't going to know to do that in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. All right, let's see what's in the mailbag, Sarah.
Let's do it. Jeff in Pennsylvania has some feedback on our Amazon story and state taxes from yesterday. The main issue with imposing sales tax collection obligations on internet sellers is the sheer number of taxing jurisdictions. There are over 6,000 states and local municipalities who impose sales and use taxes, and the same item is often taxed differently. Sure, the Amazons of the world, they figure out how to tax correctly, but it's not easy, especially if you're a small company, it might be more of a burden. I'm actually surprised that the Supreme Court changed course here. As in the Quill case, the court essentially said that this was a matter of Congress to fix, at least originally. Congress tried several times over the years, but the bills never went far.
Yeah, and a lot of people pointed out, like, every state that collects sales tax also collects use tax. So even if you order from out of state, you aren't exempt from the tax. We were only talking about the retailers being exempt from the tax. And we were discussing this morning in our Slack about this, you know, 6,000 jurisdictions and how that would be handled. Turns out Amazon does collect local taxes, according to itself, on its website. It says it collects state and local taxes. So, because Roger noticed that when he ordered something from Newegg when he lived in San Francisco, it was a different price than when he ordered it for Glendale, because they were charging the different municipal taxes there. So thank you, Jeff. Good to have expertise writing in.
Yeah, and thanks to everybody who wrote in. We got a lot of good feedback on this one.
Yeah. All right, let's check in with Len Peralta, who has been illustrating during the show. What do you got for us, Len?
Well, you know, I am very happy to see that tech is getting younger and diversifying. And if you remember the show The Muppet Babies, this is, you know, it's the tech babies, the VC tech babies who are getting that sweet, sweet VC money. I think this is the new show that's going to be on every tech channel, the VC tech babies. Getting that sweet, sweet VC
money. I like
money.
That the baby has a Windows onesie.
Like, take money. Take the money.
That's right. Take it. They don't know what to do with it, but that's all right. As long as we're giving it to the youth and diversifying, I think it's all good.
Love
that
it.
That is excellent. Thank you, Len.
Thank you,
Len. Oh, no problem.
And also thanks to Megan Rose Dickey. First time on DTNS, but not the
last.
Thank
you for having me. No, this was great.
Yeah, it's really fun. You know, we all know what you do all day, but you're not only a writer, but you have podcasts. Tell everybody where they can keep in touch with your work.
Yeah, so I also do a podcast with my colleague Henry Pigvet. It's called Control T. Yep, there it is. And you can subscribe on iTunes. Unfortunately, we don't have a podcast page on our new website, which is unfortunate. But if you see, it's just techcrunch.com/tag/controlT. That's CTRL plus T. And yeah, or follow me on Twitter. I'm just at Megan Rose Dickey. So hit me up.
Excellent. Patrons making my birthday dreams come true. We are up 5 patrons over last month. Wanted to get us to 10 by the end of the month. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Keep it up. Lots of perks for folks who want to support the show. Not only do you give value back for the value you get from the show, but you get a weekly column. Sarah had an interesting take on the Echo this week. You can check that out at the associate producer level. You got the Slack that I was mentioning earlier. So if you haven't already, why not give us a dollar? It's only a dollar a month at the minimum. Patreon.com/DTNS.
If you have feedback, questions, anything for us, our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Want to watch us live? We are live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. And find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back on Monday with Lamar Wilson. Talk to you then.
Is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
That was great. Thank you,
Good
Megan.
Good show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Good show. Woo.
Yeah, that was fun.
It was great.
Super fun. Yeah. Yes, please come back soon. What are you doing this weekend, Megan? Anything good?
Well, it's Pride, so I'm actually about to hit up the Trans March. And
is that like Market Street or?
There's a rally at Dolores Park, and then there's a march along Market Street, and there's an after party at El Rio. So it's going to be quite the weekend.
Oh my!
Gotta love El Rio.
Yeah.
Gotta love it.
I remember moving to San Francisco in 1999. And being introduced to Pride Week.
Nice.
I remember when, I don't know if they still do, but El Rio had dollar beers on Mondays.
Oh.
So a lot of,
back in the day of Tech TV, Tom and Roger and I worked there, like, we would all go on Monday because we're like, it's cheap. Now I'm like, can you imagine drinking like 90 beers on a Monday? Like, you know? But at the time we were like, but we're saving money.
Yeah, the more you drink, the more you save.
There seemed to be more of those right after the web bubble burst, and then like a
more
lot
of
those places,
yeah,
they're like, totally. All our patrons are gone because the companies they work for no longer exist, so we need to drum up foot traffic.
So much crowd.
I miss the food.
So the Trans March is today, you said?
Yeah, it's today.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Well, Megan, this is the part of the show where I come up with the title. For it, and Sarah and Tom.
We're basically just hanging, you know. It's a Friday fun event, so
cool.
Please stay with us as long as you can, but you know, you've got other stuff to do. That's
my faves are Facebook's Bowl of Sugar, 28 is Old in Tech, Don't Hulu and Drive.
Ooh, Don't Hulu and Drive.
I don't like that one. It's too sad.
That's the only problem. It's a good title, but yeah, it's really sad.
Yeah.
Be nice to VC Tech babies.
I feel like that implies someone's been mean to them, or you know,
nothing. They're also not babies,
right?
I mean, you know,
they're youngish babies.
I remember I had a guest that I don't. He used to run the. Back when Palm Pilot was like the thing, he would come on the show once a week, Screensavers, to do his Palm Pilot. I'm trying to remember his name. But he got married, and I was talking to his wife, and like, you know, their whole marriage and everything. It's like, yeah, I'm 25. I'm still working on that. It's like, oh, you're just a baby. So even at that point, anything under 30 was still considered to be baby fat. Yeah, you're so good.
I remember being like mid-20s and someone who was in their, I don't know, mid-30s or whatever, you know, would kind of be like, oh, you're a child, you know? And it used to really bug me, you know, like, excuse you, I have a college degree, I'm an adult, you know?
I live
like,
in my own
age
place.
Age is just a number. Yeah, exactly. But now I find myself having to like, because I feel that way sometimes where someone's like, oh, you know, life is hard. And I'm like, dude, turn 40 and then let's talk. Because that's just what happens when you get older, you know?
No, it's because you wisen up and you just want to kind of backhand the next, you know, smart aleck.
But it's not, yeah, like it's not supposed to like, you know, diminish anybody's feelings.
Hey, listen, if you have to move
both sides of it, but I think it's just like we just sort of find
ourselves. If you have to move back home to your parents in your mid-20s, it's a deal, but it's not that big of a deal. If you're doing it when you're 40, I'm sorry, that's just an entirely different set of issues.
Well, great. If I have to do that, I'll know how Roger feels.
Wait, Sarah, I thought you were a lot younger. I did not realize that.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
News to me.
I get that a lot, you know? Like, if you get carded and then you give them your ID and they go, oh, I'm sorry, and give it back to you, you're like...
Wait, why are you apologizing?
Well, like, because, like, you're so much older than I thought you were. So it's, like, compliment, but also very backhanded. Like, you look
it's
young,
always meant well.
Right. Yeah, I think if someone is like, whoa, you're only in your 20s, you seemed much older.
Right, yeah.
That would be more of the...
Actually, there have been a handful of people I mistook to be a lot older than they actually were.
Like who?
I was thankfully... It was only to other people in the office and never directly to that person. So maybe it got to them in a roundabout way. But not for me. Facebook's bowl of sugar, then?
I just created sowing the seeds of success as a placeholder. Okay. How's that?
Okay. Sowing the seeds. It sounds like, what was that band?
Tears
for Fears.
Yep.
Sowing the seeds. Oh, wait, better not. YouTube will fly.
Wait, what were the seeds we were talking about today?
Planting the seed with the young startup people.
Oh, got it.
Could also be allusion to prosperity gospel where you.
I'm open to changing it. It's just what I put in while I was waiting.
Oh, no, it's good.
Right. I'm going to log off because I'm going to hopefully go to a baseball game this evening.
Oh, Major League Baseball game?
Major League Baseball. Wow. Detroit Fancy. Tigers versus the Cleveland Indians.
Wow. Now, are those two, are they bitter rivals or no?
They're in the same division.
And they're close to us. Cleveland and Detroit are fairly close to each other.
Yeah. And the but the Tigers are not doing well this year.
Oh, okay.
Neither are we, really. We have sort of problems.
Well, what's your favorite ball game snack?
Oh, tonight is Dollar Dog Night.
I'm going to fly over there because I'm hungry.
That's where you have 90 hot dogs because
you're
right. saving money.
Dollar Dog Long Night, you can't go wrong. So I hope it doesn't rain out. Because
find out all the packages say the hot dogs are due today. We got to sell a boatload of these.
These have been here for a month. We got to get rid of these.
So. Just sell them for a dollar.
So go.
All right, guys. Take care, everybody.
Lynn.
Nice meeting you, Megan.
Bye, Lynn. You too.
Take care.
And don't forget to go to LynnPeraltaStore.com to check. Yes. If nothing else, just to check out the art.
I'll have to check that out. But yeah, I'm probably going to bounce as well. Get ready for the trans march.
Yeah.
For pregame with my cupcakes. So
right. No, we've been keeping you from your cupcakes. I feel bad now.
Yeah, they arrived like 20 minutes ago.
Oh my gosh, you have to go.
Yeah. But thanks for having me. I hope you guys have a good weekend.
Thanks,
Thank
Megan.
You so much for
so
coming
good to
on
see
the
you
show.
Megan. Right,
you too, Sarah.
Bye.
It was a good shoe.
Have fun. It's against your terms of service if you don't, according to Facebook.
If you don't have fun.
I have agreed to have fun.
Right.
That would actually be a very interesting terms of service.
Well, imagine if a kid's like, I don't agree to this.
I do not want to have fun. This is I'm only going to use Messenger for very serious venture capital related issues.
Some people are serious like that.
I mean, I get what Facebook's doing. You know, they also, the Messenger Kids app, they had changed course, which we reported a couple of weeks ago, where it's like, it used to be, if your mother and your mother are friends, then we can be friends as kids or mother, father, or whoever. And then it was like, well, but parents aren't always friends, even if kids are really good friends. And that's not necessarily dangerous, but that's not a requirement anymore, because that's the parent version of Facebook is totally different, right?
Well, because that rule almost encouraged the, I don't want you to be friends with them. They're not from a good family, right? Like, no, the kid might be totally fine, even if you don't like the parents. The parents shouldn't have to be connected on Facebook.
Exactly. I mean, as a child, I, but like I had certain friends where my parents were not, I mean, they didn't hate them or anything.
No,
but it
it's
wasn't
just
like they were
going
to hang out with that other kid's parents.
Yeah, I can't imagine that the Petersons, my best friend in kindergarten, and we still talk on Twitter regularly and play fantasy baseball together. The Petersons wouldn't have wanted to have to be Facebook friends with my parents. It's not like they didn't like each other. They just moved in different worlds, I guess.
Yeah.
That even makes it sound too dramatic. It's like, no, they had their thing and my parents had their thing, and they wouldn't have cared about the kind of things you post on Facebook and vice versa.
Right.
But Jeff and I should have been able to use this, right? So, yeah.
Well, and yeah, I mean, again, we didn't have tools like this when we were at this age, but there were some friends where my parents downright did not like the other parents because they didn't like the rules or the, you know, lack of rules or whatever it was.
Oh,
the parents
God.
Weren't, they did not vouch for each other, but they also weren't keeping me from having a, you know, little kid friend. So this app is sort of like, are you going to be kind and respectful, have some fun? Like, well, then you kind of take the parents out of it. Hopefully.
Well, the parents should be approving, like, okay, yes, you can be friends with Jeff, but without putting a burden on the parents.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, sort of reiterating, you know, adults have all sorts of issues with each other. But if the kids don't, and they all, you know, think of it as a fun sort of playground that's, you know, for their smartphones or whatever.
I think that one of the biggest objections is 6 to 12. Having Messenger for kids encourages smartphone use. And a lot of people are saying, you should be doing the opposite. You shouldn't be encouraging smartphone use. You should be limiting it and using it responsibly.
In a way, it kind of reminds me of how some parents approach the telephone, right? You know, some kids I knew in grade school had their own telephone in their room. And my parents are like, no, there's just one in the house.
Yeah, same here.
And, you know, you're not going to be on it all the time talking to your friends. You can talk, you know, and it was very much about being able to moderate. And with smartphones, you can do that to an extent, but, you know, I mean, it's not like you want to give them your phone every time they want to talk with their friends, but I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting, but also very complicated conundrum.
Definitely.
As soon as you said, like, we didn't have those tools back then, I immediately thought, oh, right, because the way I would get a hold of Jeff Peterson would be I would call him at 664-1475. I still remember the number.
Wait, is that
Sorry
okay to
the
say?
Person who now has that number.
Well, you don't know what area code it was. Mm-hmm. So,
well, Tom, we know enough about you that somebody could probably figure it out.
Yeah, and I bet they don't have that number anymore.
Probably not. I remember it was sort of like it went from one line, and there was, you know, a phone in the kitchen and a phone in my parents' bedroom.
Oh,
and that's what it was. And they weren't like wireless or anything.
Yeah, so we just had the one.
I had, you know, you could sit on my parents' bed unless they made me leave, you know, or like walk around in the kitchen with a cord. My mom's upset. But, and then call waiting happened. And so it was like, if I was talking for 3 hours to, you know, I don't know, but a friend in fourth grade, at least somebody else could get through. So it was like, okay, well, this is a little bit better. Sarah can, you know, talk all day as long as emergencies can still come in.
Hold on. Yeah, just a moment. Click, click. I'm sorry. Someone wants to talk to my mom. I got to go. Okay. Bye.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And the rule was always like, you don't tell them to call back. You get off the phone.
Yeah. No, same
right?
here.
And then it was, your friends are calling way too late, Sarah. This is not cool. Your friends are leaving weird messages on the answer machine. Also in my parents' bedroom. I don't really know why. And
no
finally
calling
it was,
during dinner time. That was
that one. Too. Yep. And then finally it was reluctantly, like it wasn't a present or anything. It was like, you're going to have your own line because we just can't handle.
Oh, wow. No. I think cordless phones came along around the time that my parents would have considered another line. And they were like, well, you just have a cordless phone. So
Cordless. I'm like, wireless. That doesn't sound right. Cordless phones. Yeah. Oh, first but cordless phone. What fun.
I remember when my sister got in junior high, and when she became a teenager, my parents sprang to buy the longer cord for the phone so that she could go around the corner into the living room and talk instead of having to bother dad while he was watching TV in the family room.
Of course. Yeah.
We only had the one phone. There were no other phones in the house. It was just the one.
Yeah, it's so funny how, you know, and I remember
and it was
being
on the
like,
wall.
Yeah, the kitchen one was always on the wall. Yeah. There was never like the my parents had, you know, sort of a, you know, the tabletop, but it was, yeah, the cord, you know, you kind of like you're spinning around. My mom would always say, it's going to get all messed up. Stop doing that. You know, keep the cord intact. You're stretching it out.
It was a revelation the first time I used the phone with the longer cord, and I was like, oh, I can go all the way over here around the corner.
I'm less tethered.
Technology is amazing.
Well, people with two lines I always thought were like super rich.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Like, ooh, they could pay for a second line.
It's like, that's like having two cable lines in your home.
My dad did a splitter so that we could get the extra cable.
Back before they started trying to tamper proof people stealing the premium stuff.
You couldn't get the like HBO Cinemax or channels above 13. Off the splitter.
I remember at the flea market, I remember this guy selling all these little adapters. Like, get his little thing was get HBO for free. It was back when they modulated the signal in order to scramble it, but you know, it wasn't that hard to.
Captain Jack says second line was eventually dedicated to the dial-up modem. Dude, that you're talking way farther down the line.
Yeah, we're
talking pre-modem times.
Yeah,
well, not pre-modem, but just like in the 80s. Because
yeah, I guess some people might have had a modem with their Commodore 64 or VIC 20 or something. But.
I guess it was like the 90s. Do you guys remember Star 69?
Oh yeah,
yes,
that great REM song.
Which is funny because it existed before. I had it, like my parents had to, you know, add it to the package or whatever. But I knew what it was. I knew that if somebody called you and pranked you or whatever, mm-hmm. and you wanted, you know, you don't get like an ID, but you call them back. I knew that it existed. And there were a couple of times where like, you know, because teenagers are horrible, like some boy, yeah. you know, called me and, you know, said something and then hung up. And I was like, I have Star 69. I know you did that. Total
well,
bluff.
We're going to leave the network and we'll stick around on the local channels for our continuing coverage where Tom will sing Star 69. We'll say goodbye to the DTNS radio network.
Goodbye.
We're off.
Star 69. That's all I remember of it. There's a lot of guitar riffs in that song.
There were a lot of the first... I don't know, a couple of years of that, there were a lot of people getting caught for stuff where someone's like, no, I just called you back. I have Star 69. Like, you're the one who just called me. And people are like, what? Oh, shoot. I've got to stalk you a different way. You know, times haven't actually really changed.
Yeah, it's just the tools. I keep saying that.
Yeah.
It's just the tools that have changed. We just need to learn to adapt to the new tools. Everything's going to be just fine.
Oh, yes. As you can see. Life is going just fine.
Things are generally improving over time. But they don't improve linearly. And I think that's what throws us all off, right? Because, you know, stuff gets better and then it gets worse for a while and then it gets better.
And also,
over time, it's going up. But we feel the downs more significantly because we're living through them.
Well, is it? What about distribution of the good times? Like...
socialized good times, is that what you're saying?
I'm just curious, like does everyone feel the good times, or is it just like some people
over time more people are feeling more good times?
There's definitely people who would disagree, but I think the general trend of humanity,
the standard of living by most measurements has improved over long over when you look over long periods of time.
lifespan,
wealth, shelter, etc.
Although for wealth,
access to information.
I know you're trying to find a way to say no, things are getting worse, Roger. I can tell.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying, what about the whole thing where generationally kids kids will not have it better or on the same level as their parents in terms of.
Okay, but we're talking. I think that's another example of the cycles. Are they going to have it better than their great grandparents? And everyone before them? Probably the answer to that is yes. And to give you something to go on, the other side of it is you never know when the curve has started to go downward until it's gone down a couple of cycles. So who knows? This may be the end of the upswing, but generally the upswing is pretty steady over a long enough period of time. There's that one Europe
until
had
the really, aliens come.
Europe had a really bad dip. China had a dip at one point.
They all had dips and they went up. And
but now we have a global culture, so we can all have the dip at the same time. Yay.
Dippin' dots.
Okay, so this is...
What?
Somebody's sending me a link that I'm not going to read because I'm pretty sure it's a parody website, and I just don't appreciate that.
Well... Get it Weird. Together, somebody. Tom's trying to have a good TGIF.
It's a comedy. It's a comedy thing. And they at replied you too.
Who, me?
Yeah, on Twitter.
Oh,
It's a joke story. And without saying, isn't this funny? I don't really appreciate that so much. I feel like I'm trying to be tricked.
I don't. The screenshot, I'm like, whatever that is, I don't want to see it. I don't care. Well, what I do care about is everyone having a very nice weekend.
Yes.
I don't know about you guys, but mine is going to be some work. Laundry
and chores. Put your nose to the grindstone?
Well, you know, working from home, it's like, I got stuff to do, but you know, it's kind of chill.
Yeah.
And yeah, catching up on some shows.
This is the first weekend I haven't had anything going on in a while, so I think we'll be pretty chill, too.
Yeah.
I get to use my driveway for the first time in 2 weeks.
That's exciting.
What was...
were doing the side... They're enlarging... Because I live on a corner, they were enlarging the sidewalk because they wanted to shrink the intersection so cars wouldn't drive by so fast, as well as make it safer for, because I live down from a bunch of schools, make it safer for kids to cross the street. So instead of trying to cross a very wide street, it would be
slow. Oh, and they had to shorten your driveway?
No, they had to dig up the entire sidewalk around my house.
Oh, I see.
And the easement, and they basically had to push it out another 5 feet. So they had to put new cement and a lot of jackhammers and backhoes.
Well, congratulations on your new and improved driveway.
Yeah.
And bigger sidewalks.
Woohoo. Hopefully it doesn't mean that people congregate and throw stuff at my house.
And in a further evidence of the conservation of noise, as yours is winding up, they brought in a crane and a cement truck today for one of the houses that's being rebuilt down the street from me.
I don't know what it is with your neighborhood. I kid you not. Every time I drive to where Tom lives, there's another house that's either being in the process of torn down or some sort of like remodeling.
Yeah. Our neighborhood is full of old houses that have been held on for a long time by people, but the property values have risen significantly, especially just in the past couple years. And so when you sell a house in this neighborhood, it generally makes financial sense for the new owner to tear it down and build a new house. Because it's so much more valuable, and that's what happens. So that's why there's so much construction. Pretty much every house that gets sold gets torn down, and so instead of people selling a house, and then somebody moves in and you barely even notice. Like you notice every single house that gets sold.
It's interesting because
people are cashing in because of the rise in property values too.
Well, what I find fascinating is they're doing something very similar to San Francisco. Is when they get the lot and they rebuild, they build to the edge of the property, like in order to maximize.
Sometimes, not every time. It depends. It's interesting to see the different strategies there. Yeah. Well, folks, we were saying goodbye, and then we started having too much fun talking about Roger's driveway. So have a lovely weekend and a good rest of your day.
Thanks, patrons.
Good day.
Talk to you on Monday.
Internet.